Comics podcast. I'm your host Adam, and with me as always is my co-host Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
How's it going, man?
I'm good. We're in 2018 now. We have been for a while, but I just like reminding people of that.
We are. Although by the time they hear this, we might be pretty far into 2018. Well, they'll be like, yeah, what the hell?
Not that far.
They'll be like, duh. They'll be like,
it's a public service announcement. For the people, because during the new year, in the very early stages, you forget when you're writing the date. Sometimes you write the previous year because you're so used to it. So this is a public service announcement that we are, in fact, in 2018. We are less than a calendar year away from Aquaman.
Yes.
By the time you hear this, the DC streaming service may or may not have a name and a release date. Probably not, but maybe.
It's possible. We just heard that Young Justice isn't coming to the fourth quarter of 2018. So it seems like, that's inching closer to at least getting a release date. We're at least hearing something of a time frame of when some of this stuff is going to hit. So
yeah. And we know that Krypton is coming March 21st.
That's not on the streaming service, though.
No, it's on Sci-Fi, but I do. I've been waiting for a date, so even if I previously said this on another podcast, I'm going to say it again because we finally have a date.
I saw you post, I think, on Instagram about Krypton's release date, and I sent you something like, yeah, you finally got what you've been waiting for, just a release date for finally.
Let's be honest. If I finally got what I've been waiting for, I'd be on the mascara with Gal Gadot and Margot Robbie. So I haven't gotten what I'm waiting for. I probably never will get that. But the consolation, a good consolation prize is Krypton. so I'll take it.
Well, I'm glad you got your consolation prize, Dad.
Yeah, well, thank you. But I know that, we just finished saying it's 2018. But we're going to take the audience back in time.
To before I was born. So I guess, poof, there you go. You're doing this episode on your own, Adam.
All right, good. Now the fun begins already. No, I'm kidding. excuse me, I got choked up there. See, the thought of you not being here, Jordan, caused me to get choked up. So.
Oh, that's so nice, Adam.
isn't it? It really is. Again, remind everybody how young you are, Jordan.
19 years old. So, hey, if it's 2018, then maybe by the time this episode airs, I'll be 20 by that point. But I don't know.
So you were four. Hold on a second. By the way, we're taking you back to 1995 for our review and retrospective of Batman Forever, first entry into the Joel Schumacher era of Batman.
But the third entry in the Burton Schumacher quadrilogy.
Yes, correct.
Because as much as you don't like to admit it, Adam, they are in the same universe.
Well, this one I don't mind, but we'll get into it in a minute. So if this came out in 1995, that would put it at,
23 years, almost 23 years old, I guess.
So you were 4 years from being born.
Three and a half, really. Yeah, 3.5 years,
yeah,
I guess.
Away from being born at that point, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no point in asking you, what was your initial anticipation going into this movie? Because you weren't even a twinkle in your parents' eye at that point. So,
yeah, I guess you'll have to take the lead on this one.
So I'll forego that question to you, and I'll tell you my anticipation level. As anybody who listens to this podcast by now knows, I enjoyed Batman 89 and Batman Returns. I was eagerly anticipating the next chapter. Back then in 1995, ignorance was bliss, and I didn't have the internet, and I didn't keep track of who was directing what movie or who was starring as Batman. I just knew, hey, there's another Batman coming out. Val Kilmer was playing Batman. Joel Schumacher was directing. I had no idea who either of them were. And I was like, all right, I'm in.
Were you disappointed at all that Michael Keaton wasn't returning?
I guess, I mean, what was I, 12 at that point? I guess I was. Hold on a second. Yeah, I was 12 at that point. I mean, it was, at first I'm like, oh, that's, I like Michael Keaton. But it wasn't like I'm like, you know, it wasn't like I didn't get into a pre-internet rage over it and say, oh my God, I'm not because Michael Keaton isn't in it. It was just like,
I got you.
You know, it's hey, I saw the trailer. He looked like Batman. I'm like, all right, I'm in. Again, ignorance is bliss. and so I was excited for it. I knew of Jim Carrey. I knew of Jim Carrey, and I was excited for his Riddler. So there was that. I was actually excited that we were getting Robin for the first time.
Yeah, well, not the first time.
What?
Which reminds me, Adam, actually.
The first time in modern live action.
That's true.
Okay.
It reminds me, Adam, we should have included, I'm not sure if the listeners have heard this yet, we did our Superman ideal casting, which the listeners have heard at this point. I'm not sure if they will have heard our Batman ideal casting by this point. But we neglected to include Robin on our Batman ideal casting, and it's because I was an idiot and I forgot.
Cleared that up, we can move on. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I had neglected to remember the Robins from the serials. And so, because obviously our qualification was that a character had to appear three times in live action. I was thinking, oh, well, we've got Burt Ward and we've got Chris O'Donnell and we haven't gotten Brenton Thwaites yet. So I wasn't counting him.
Oh, okay.
But soon after we recorded the episode, I was like, damn it. I forgot about the Robins from the serial. So anyway, I just thought I'd apologize to the listeners that we forgot to do that.
I apologize as well. I should have caught on to that. Me being the veteran of this podcast, at least in age anyway. But I will say I would have broken the rules and chosen Brenton Thwaites anyway. How about that?
Oh, my goodness.
No, actually, I did like Burt Ward, given that, you know, given what the 60s was trying to do and what was all going down, you know. I don't know. I don't know who I would have chosen.
Well, hey, I'll tell you right now, I would have chosen the Robin we're about to talk about in this episode, because I'm not counting Brenton Thwaites, Adam. We can't count him, we can't judge him based on a picture.
This is our podcast. This is our podcast. We can do whatever we want, no matter how ridiculous it sounds. And that's the beauty of having our own podcast, is we make the rules, whether people like it or don't like it.
Okay, all right, fair enough. It's fair enough.
But I was excited to get Robin for technically not the first time in live action, but I was excited to have him. And so I was pumped. So I don't know if you have it up yet, but do you have our handy IMDb description of this movie?
Shoot. I'm pulling it up now. Let's see what we got. All right. What are we thinking? One sentence or two sentences?
Okay. Over, under, I'm going to say one.
Hey, you're absolutely right. All right, let's see. Batman must battle former district attorney Harvey Dent, who is now Two-Face, and Edward Nygma, the Riddler, with help from an amorous psychologist and a young circus acrobat who becomes his sidekick, Robin.
Yeah, works. It works. What can I say?
I'll say something. This will sort of get into the movie itself. This description, it gives more time to Harvey Dent's time as a district attorney than the movie actually does.
Oh, definitely, hands down.
This one sentence description.
Without question, oh, easily, yeah.
Is that a good segue into
yeah,
the?
Yeah, I mean, let's start it. We're over the spoiler wall, really.
Okay.
If you're concerned about spoilers for this movie.
Oh man.
I give up. You know.
Okay. Actually, though, I'm not gonna. I'll hold off on my two-phase rant for a little bit. What I'll say about this, the thing that I think is best to start off with this movie about is that this movie should not have been called Batman Forever. I'll tell you what it should have been called. It should have been Peter Griffin from Family Guy would have been happy about this because they should have named the movie exactly what a line is in the movie. And I'll tell you what that line is. Was that over the top? I can never tell. That's what this movie should have been called. Batman, : was that over the top? I can never tell, because that is a perfect description of this movie.
Well, what the movie should have been called, because it's related to Batman and Val Kilmer was Batman, it should have been called Batman, : one time only. And then I'll jump ahead. Batman and Robin should be called Batman and Robin, : is it over yet? That's what they should have been called. But let's get to this movie. Here, speaking of Batman, I will say that I enjoyed the opening sequence of this film quite a bit. Because
I enjoyed the part where the bat signal, where the Warner Brothers logo turned into the bat signal.
That was great. Yeah, I like that.
Then I like the part where Batman's getting all his gadgets together and all. But as soon as Alfred has the line about the will you take the soup with you or whatever the hell he says, and Batman replies with, I'll get drive.
No, he says, can I persuade you to take a sandwich, sir?
Sandwich, not the soup. Yeah.
He finished the soup and Batman returns. Remember the cold one.
Yeah. The pity. What is it called? The pity.
Pussy slob. Pussy slob.
Didn't who was it? Was it Andy that told us what that tasted like?
Yeah, Andy knows all about this kind of soup. I don't know why this has turned into a cooking podcast, but
Okay, so Batman finishes soup. This time he gets a sandwich. But no, that line completely took off any epicness of that opening scene. That line just dropped it.
But let's be honest. Come on. Getting drive-through is better for the McDonald's tie-in.
Okay. Oh, didn't they have the cool cup for Batman Forever?
I had those. Oh, yeah. I had those glass cups. Great.
That's something that makes me wish I was alive in 1995.
And then, no, but here's the kicker. My nephews were born, and one of them broke it.
Oh.
Damn ingrates.
That sucks.
Who I love dearly.
I will say... Here's the thing about Batman making one-liners. It only works if because it does work sometimes, but it only works if Batman is trying to be serious. If he's being serious and the line just comes off as funny to the audience. Right. Here, that line it's as if Batman's not saying that line seriously. Batman's trying to make a quip in that situation. And that's why it falls so flat. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's a ridiculous line. I'll give you that. But I wasn't talking about that opening sequence. I mean, the suit up was cool until I got a good look at Rockhammer's ass, which I didn't really need.
I will say, I'm not a big fan of Elliot Goldenthal's score, but speaking to that opening scene, his Batman theme, the rest of his score I don't care for, but his actual Batman theme,
yeah,
I like
the,
quite
the
a bit.
The opening theme was good.
Yeah, I like that.
So I like that, and you know, like I said, the suit up thing was fine. I didn't care for the ass shot, but for the ladies and for some men, I guess I'll go with it. But
sure,
if it was one, but they had to show it a second time in the second suit up when he changed outfits. But we'll get to that later, maybe. The opening scene I was talking about was when he swoops in, and then later the rescue of that security guard that Two-Face has captured and is using as bait to lure Batman. The whole rescue.
Okay, that scene was good for the first 20 seconds. We got 20 seconds of Tommy Lee Jones playing Two-Face really well, and that's it in this movie.
No, but I'm just talking about the Batman portion of it. Ignore.
Okay, but I got to touch on that. I got to touch on that part, though.
Oh, but we
that
will. Part, okay, go ahead.
I'll compliment that part, because I'm gonna very heavily criticize Tommy Lee Jones' Two-Face on this episode.
Yeah,
but I want to give him his 30 seconds that he actually did really well. When he's up in that guy's face and he's giving that speech to him, the first 30 seconds of that are really frightening and what I'd want to see from Two-Face. And then all of a sudden he starts screaming, and then it completely gets out of hand, and he's completely, as Riddler says later in the movie, completely over the top for the rest of the movie. But no, go on and go with what else you were going to say about that scene.
Yeah, right. I agree with you, by the way. Look, let's just get, you know, want to get it out of the way now. He was terrible in this movie. Horrendous. And I'm going to get a little bit vulgar here. Not too vulgar, but I'm going to get a little bit vulgar. Two-Face was essentially Jack Nicholson's Joker if Barney the Dinosaur had shat on half of his face.
Oh, my God.
And kids in 1995 will appreciate that reference, because 3/4 of them watch Barney. So there you go.
It's the problem. Here's the thing. Here's why Two-Face. You know, I was actually on the Batman on Film Facebook group. We were having a conversation the other day about the best portrayed Batman villain in live action and the worst portrayed. And I said that Tommy Lee Jones' Two-Face was the worst portrayed. And the reason for that is that not only was his performance completely over the top, but the way he was written in the movie was completely over top. Because to me, and I think I talked about this a lot on our Batman versus Two-Face movie review, because I had similar complaints about Two-Face in that animated film. And it's that Two-Face, the most interesting thing about him is how Harvey Dent went from Gotham's White Knight, how he had this descent into villainy, this completely tragic descent.
Yeah.
And they completely glossed over that in 15 seconds of TV footage in this movie. And so you don't get to see that. You just start out, I mean, technically Billy Dee Williams was playing the same Harvey Dent in Batman 89, but that's two films ago at this point. It's a different actor. And we saw him as Harvey Dent, but we didn't see the descent. So it's like they completely jumped over what makes Two-Face so fascinating. And that just, that forever, no pun intended, it forever rubs me the wrong way.
Right, and that's a good pun, even though you didn't intend it.
Thank you.
But so that garbage aside, in the opening, when Batman saves that security guard, it was an awesome scene. Like,
it's pretty good.
Batman's entrance and that whole rescue was a comic book brought to life, I would say.
The entrance, though, the end of that scene I dug a lot. The entrance, though, where the guys have that, the Batman has that, I don't know, one of his gadgets. No, I'm talking
about when he swings down to talk to Gordon and Chase, when he swings on the grappling hook, and then he swings to the, to the ground.
Okay. So you're not talking, what about, because what I was referring to was his entrance.
Are you talking about the elevator scene?
Yes.
It wasn't all ridiculous, but the soundtrack at that moment.
Yeah, and what was up?
When he uses the bat taser, if you want to call it, whatever.
Yes, and it goes.
And it makes that cartoon sound.
What was that? I
can guarantee you, I was sitting in the theater saying, "What the hell's going on here?" And watching it last night in preparation for the podcast, again, like I was back at 12 years old, I said, what the hell is going on here?
I'll give you the Gordon's. The scene he has with Gordon at the beginning of this movie is the best Gordon scene in any of the four movies.
Oh, yeah, easily.
But I will say, and this is starting off, I do not care for Chase Meridian.
I'm kind of 50-50 on her, but what I did like is that the whole exchange between her, Gordon, and Batman, it shows you that Batman is a very astute, intelligent individual, because he's talking about, you know, like he's he's picking up off her banter and they're finishing each other's sentences about psychosis and psychotic breaks and stuff. So it shows that Batman has a mental capacity that we're familiar with in the comics, but really wasn't shown in the first two Burton films.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
I don't think the Burton films did enough to showcase Batman's intelligence. And even when Batman saves the security guard, when he uses the hearing aid, as part of the rescue, again, showing Batman's ingenuity and intelligence. I like that.
And I'll say, I hear a lot of people complain about that security guard. That's actually, I found him, like, I actually liked him in that scene. Like, I thought, I don't know, it was kind of humorous, just him completely overreacting.
He was a little bit over the top, but I'm like, all right, whatever. I'll go with it.
Maybe if everything else wasn't so over the top of this movie, maybe I would have felt that he was too over the top. But compared to everything else, he wasn't over the top. That's the crazy thing about this movie. He was like one of the more understated performances in this movie.
well, when compared to Two-Face, yeah, for sure. But going on specifically to, I want to touch on, because we're talking about him so much.
Sure.
I really enjoyed. Val Kilmer as Batman and Bruce Wayne.
Oh, I'm gonna have to disagree with you on that, Adam.
I liked him. I liked him as a. It was. First of all, what I liked is that they actually showed Bruce Wayne having more of the, billionaire playboy facade. He attended multiple functions. The way he asked, Chase out on a date and. How he played that off, when he's talking about going rock climbing and all that. That was very much the billionaire playboy, the aloof, carefree Bruce Wayne. And I like that.
Well, at this point in the trilogy, he should have been getting ready to propose. At this point in the quadrilogy, he should have been getting ready to propose to Selina Kyle from the last film. Right, so I didn't care for any of that.
Right. I understand your grievance, but this quadrilogy is so flimsy about him having a relationship that it's like, remember, it was made in a time when Hollywood's like, all right, the hero needs to have a love interest just because.
Well, like, yeah, I mean, he had a different one in every one of the four movies.
Not just because in 1995's Hollywood, or in 1989 to 97 Hollywood, it was like the male hero has to have the love interest to get the girls in the theater. That's how they thought back then.
Well, then, you know what they should have done? I'll tell you exactly what they should have done. I mean, I agree that he should have had a love interest, and I'll tell you who it should have been. It should have been Catwoman returning from the previous film, and it should have been you want to know what my least favorite line in this entire film is? Maybe you can guess what it is, but I'll tell you what my least favorite line is.
Let me guess. Don't ruin it. When he says to Alfred, I've never been in love before, Alfred.
Yes, thank you. I knew you were going to be able to guess.
Watching it last night, I'm like, man, Jordan probably turned into the Red Hulk when he rewatched this scene.
Oh my God, I hate that scene. I hate that scene so much. It's like it's a flat out lie. It is a flat out lie, especially given he actually did reference Chase referenced Selena earlier in the film, and then Bruce goes and has a line that says he's never been in love before, when that is clearly not true if you watch the previous film. Because, oh my goodness, that line. That line, yes, made me very, very angry as a Batcat shipper. Not only the fact that they bring in a new love interest, they completely brush off Selena as if she never happened with one throwaway line to her.
But they reference the latex and the whip. You gotta give.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was the line I was referred to with Chase.
Continuity, baby. That's it, right there.
Yeah. That was the one line, but that line I liked. I was like, okay, fine. I'm still mad that Selena wasn't in this movie, but at least they acknowledged it. But then for Bruce to say he's never been in love before, that is completely spitting in the face of Selena. I mean, what is that? It's false. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
But with your grievance in mind. Yeah. I still enjoyed the fact that he was more of the – they really showcased the playboy billionaire, where in the previous two films he was a recluse. Tim Burton chose to show him as a recluse who, introvert, reclusive. Yeah. At the beginning of part two, he's sitting in the dark waiting for the bat signal to go on, because just that was it, right? That was his.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of it.
They should have shown us that. I mean, in terms of the continuity, they should have shown us that. Like, I like to see that aspect of Bruce, but I like to see that sort of before he gets involved with Selina, because to me, it's always been that Selina's the first woman that he that sort of was more to him than that.
Right,
you know,
sure,
you know, where she captured his heart in a way that he didn't think was possible.
Right,
before.
But that's not the fault of this particular movie. That's the fault of Tim Burton.
No, it's not the fault of Tim Burton. Tim Burton gave us the Batcat relationship. But
what I'm saying is he didn't give us – before that, he didn't give us what we were saying about the Playboy billionaire. It was just I'm reclusive.
Oh, okay.
I'm
okay, that's true. Yeah. He should have given us to that. Frankly, we shouldn't have had Vicki Vale – you're right. We shouldn't have had Vicki Vale in Batman 89. That should have been sort of what we focused on in terms of Bruce
His
personal life.
Here's the problem. And then I'll continue on my thread about Val Kilmer, Bruce Wayne, Batman.
Okay.
The problem is with this four films in this franchise is that they treated Bruce Wayne like James Bond, where he was essentially with a different girl every film.
Yeah.
That's what they were going for. And that's why we got what we got. But I did like I said, the aloof billionaire playboy aspect that they finally showed in this movie. Whether we should have gotten it earlier... it's a different discussion entirely, but I like that it was here, finally.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
I also like the fact that there was still darkness in Bruce Wayne's character. Like he was still wrestling with his inner demons, and you saw that throughout his memory. Like, you know, when he's flashing back to the death of his parents.
Well, that's probably the best stuff in this movie.
And he's talking with Chase about it, and the fact that he needs a, you know, she gives him a dream catcher. The whole subplot that was cut out about the Red Book.
Yeah.
I have a feeling there was more to that. We just never saw it.
Have you ever watched the Red Book edition?
No, and I want to see. And okay, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent, because I know Steven likes when we go off on a tangent. All due respect to the people that, you know, that are signing petitions and now are going to go outside of Warner Brothers and stand with a sign and take a picture and tweet it and retweet it about wanting a Zack Snyder cut, which is not going to happen, at the very least, if it does happen, for another 20 to 25 years. But forget about that. You know what kind of a movie I want? I want the Joel Schumacher director's cut of Batman Forever, because here's why, and you ask why I rate this movie higher than Batman and Robin, is because there are a lot more moments in this movie where an actual real movie is trying to be made. Like, Joel Schumacher came in with an intent to make a legitimate movie at the very least, whereas Batman and Robin had devolved into 100% a toy commercial.
Well, it doesn't. I agree with you that this one he probably set out to make a real movie and then it wound up being a cartoon.
But at the same time,
the end product is still the same. So it doesn't matter what his original intention was if the end product's the same.
But what I'm saying is you can see an actual movie in here. You can see that.
You can see that it's not there though. Yeah, I mean, because
But you could see if they had let him go a little bit more serious than what we got. I see if Joel Schumacher wanted to complete, because he's gone on record in saying that he wanted to make a darker film.
Yeah.
And that's evident by the scenes that, you know, about the whole, all the nightmares and all that stuff. And I heard about an opening scene about a breakout in art or something about Arkham.
Oh yeah, you can see that. That seems like you can find that up on YouTube. Have
I know
you seen
it's on
that
YouTube,
scene?
But I'm saying so.
Have you seen that scene though, Adam? This is amazing.
I've seen it, but what I'm telling you is there was an intent here, and even with this one, even with the cut that we got, you can still say now whether you think it works or not is a different story. But he was legitimately trying to make a honest to goodness Batman movie.
Yeah, he was trying to, but I can't judge it if that's not what the film actually.
But what you have here is still an attempt at making a legitimate Batman movie. Whether it succeeds or fails is your personal opinion.
But it shouldn't make it a better. That doesn't make it just because that was his intent. Doesn't make it a better movie.
Because it does change my opinion. In my opinion, for me, because the other one is nothing but a toy commercial.
That this one is nothing but a toy commercial too. In its final state, Joel Schumacher wanted it to be more with the deleted scenes.
I disagree with that. That's where we disagree. I see, because there are enough story points that I enjoy. I disagree with you on that, because let's go back to my point now. In terms of Val Kilmer. As Batman, like I said, I like the fact, or as Bruce Wayne and Batman, I like the fact there was still darkness in his character, like an element of the demons and the darkness that he, the internal issues that he faces. It was still present in his Batman. I loved his when Robin does come in, and we'll talk about Robin in a second. Mm-hmm. Robin does come in. I like his stance of you know, for when he first takes in Robin, the way he you know sort of gets him to eventually stay at Wayne Manor. Like I like that whole exchange.
It would have been good if Robin wasn't a grown man in this movie.
And that's another point we will disagree on. I think the age is slightly off, but I'll get to that in a second. I like the way he convinced him to stay. I liked his stance of When Dick is talking about, you know, I'm gonna be your partner, you train me, and he goes, there's nothing you could do about it, and all that jazz. I like the way Bruce Wayne tried to, at first, you know, he was dissuading me, trying, like that whole interaction felt true to a degree to the comics that I'm familiar with.
The dialogue was good, Adam. It's that, but you can't. What I'm seeing on the screen is two grown men talking, where it's supposed to be Batman and his. I mean, I would say that. Okay, I mean,
but here's the thing. Here, I know what you're saying. He should be a teenager, a young teenager, right?
Yeah.
But here's my counterpoint. In the animated series, when we first meet Robin, in those early episodes. Is he not going off to college? Doesn't he leave for college?
He's in college in those episodes, but it doesn't matter because that's later on. That's not Robin's origin. That's not when Batman takes him in. That's when Robin is almost Nightwing at that point. Then when we get Robin's reckoning and we actually see his first night on the job as Robin, he is younger. So,
okay, but my and until I'm proven wrong on this, I'll stand by it. I don't think you can put Batman in live action with a 12 or 13 year old and make it believable.
Make him 15. Make him a little bit older.
I think if they would have cast an 18 to 22 year old, it may have been better. But wasn't Chris O'Donnell like 25, 26 at that point?
Let me look. Let's see. Because this was 95. Well, that probably means they were filming in 94. He was born in 1970, so he was 20. He was 24 in this movie. He was 26 in the second one.
Okay, so had they cast an 18 to 21-year-old, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
Right? So the casting was off, but I still think making in for the purposes of a live-action movie, I think making Dick Grayson somebody that's entering his college years is a more believable route to take than putting him with a 13 to 16 year old.
Then you have to change something else, because you can't have a grown man getting adopted. He has to be a minor if he's going to get adopted.
Okay, that I'll give you, but I to me. Personally, I just can't. Again, maybe I'll be proven wrong when I see, you know, how Raven is portrayed on Titans. Maybe that'll prove me wrong.
Yeah.
But I just can't physically see a 14, 15-year-old running around with Batman and it being believable in live action.
Well, look at Tom Holland as Spider-Man. I think that's a good example. I mean, I know the actor's a little bit older, but he's like 20 years old. And he's playing 15. So I don't think that's unbelievable.
See, I disagree. To me, I prefer, and I know this is sacrilege to people, but I prefer Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker.
Well, Andrew Garfield is my favorite Spider-Man as well, but I still think...
I found that more believable. To me...
But I still think Holland's really good.
He's really good, but when he was with the Avengers, he stuck out like a sore thumb. To me, he worked best in the majority of Homecoming, when he wasn't around, you know,
12 was,
to 15 he, other grown-ass guys in costume.
I guess then we do disagree, because I thought that worked in Civil War. So I just think, no, you're right. You can't have a 12-year-old.
Technically, we only saw a CGI Spider-Man running around with 50 to 60 years. If he would have... Correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't take his mask off for the duration of that scene, right? Like,
he wasn't standing around. I don't think so, no. Okay.
Put him standing there unmasked, looking like a 15, 16-year-old, and then tell me it doesn't look off. Because to me, it would look off. But
I don't know. I don't think it would look off. I really don't. I you're right. You can't have like a 12-year-old running around with Batman. Yeah. But you could make him a little bit older, and I think... You just can't make him 26 years old like Chris O'Donnell.
I agree with you there. I agree with you there. But what I did, I still did enjoy the way Batman tried to dissuade him from that lifestyle, and then when he eventually did, like the mentorship along the way, like especially when the whole thing about when he finds the Batcave. And he's like, it should have been you, you know. And then after he goes on the joyride with the Batmobile.
Oh yeah, I dig that scene actually.
Right, and there's a lot of Robin that I do dig, and I'll get to it. But the scene where he's like, it should, you know, and so whatever, he's fighting those glow in the dark people.
Who we saw again in the subsequent movie.
Right, and they brought more glow in the dark people because. Let's make more neon in this freaking thing. So anyway, when Batman comes, they all get scared away, and I like that when he's just standing there, and they look up and they see him, and then he glides down. I like that. But when Dick Grayson at that point realizes, you know, sees him standing there, and he starts punching, and he's like, "Should have been you," blah 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 blah, and then he breaks down and is like crying. And Batman's like, if Bruce Wayne could have given his life to save your parents, he would have. Like, I all of that stuff I love between them.
Yeah, that's a good scene. I agree.
That was great stuff. And I just love the fact that it wasn't Bruce, because my fear was, all of a sudden you're going to see Bruce say, yeah, come along, I'll train you, right? And he was trying to dissuade him the whole time from killing Two-Face. Or three quarters of the time. So I like that dynamic.
But then my issue, that was good, but then my issue is that when Robin ultimately decides not to kill Two-Face, there's no, like, there should have been some sort of instigator that makes him change his mind, and we don't, you know, we don't get that.
Yeah, we're just led to assume that he's as Two-Face is dangling perilously, he's reflecting on what Batman imparted to him.
I feel like in that scene there should have been something where, I mean, I don't know how you would have done this exactly, but if Robin should have had some sort of thing where he, like, thought back to his parents and would have thought back to whether they would have wanted him to go down this path.
Like a flashback.
Something like that,
so
yeah.
So you basically wanted the Martha moment, but in Batman Forever, kind of.
You know, I mean, that's a good parallel, and yeah. I mean, I'll defend that Martha moment till the day I die, because yeah, I love that scene.
So will I. Lex feeding people Jolly Ranchers, I'll never defend. Or leaving jars of piss in a courtroom, I'll never defend.
Hey, well, you know how I feel about Eisenberg's Lex, so I won't argue with you on that.
Exactly. Well, you better not, because those two scenes were stupid.
Well, actually, the Jolly Rancher scene, I agree with you. The thing where I actually really like the scene with the jar of piss.
No, I don't want some voyeuristic shit in a Superman movie. I'm sorry.
Leave that for
Trump's visits to Russia. Keep it out of Superman movie.
All right? I gotta defend this though, because when
Trump's visit to Russia? Hey, listen,
I don't know. I'm just talking about the news. The scene in BVS. Because with that scene, because I still remember in the theater, as soon as I saw that jar of piss and I started to look at it, I was like, oh shit! My heart skipped a beat.
They could have done it by just showing Lex's empty chair, and we would have got the same idea. That jar of piss was pointless. And who knows? Maybe Affleck had to go, and they couldn't get him to the bathroom in time in the suit, so they said, here, fill this jar, and then they're like, hey, we can use this as a prop. I don't know how that came about, but I thought it was stupid. But anyway, back to this movie. So you wanted a Martha moment, you're right. It could have worked. But I like the Batman. I like the Batman for three quarters of the movie, or three quarters of Robin's time on screen. You know, killing is not gonna take away your pain. It's not gonna bring back your parents. Because to me, it was a subtle nod to the previous film where Batman is kind of sort of speaking from experience, given that the Joker had died and Batman was still struggling with his parents' death, right?
That's a good point.
And one of the things that pissed me off in this movie, one of the dislikes I have, is that in the flashback to his parents' death, right?
Uh-huh.
You can all, like, A, even the shadow doesn't look like Jack Nicholson. So, have they retconned the Joker killing his parents?
Well, they should have brought back that guy who looked a lot like Jack Nicholson.
Yes,
who played him in the flashbacks.
That's what I'm saying.
Couldn't they have sort of just reused the flashback from Batman 89? I mean,
technically, it's a Warner Brothers property. It's the quote unquote same universe.
Because did they recast Thomas, Martha, and Bruce?
Yeah, yeah.
They did. They recast them too. Yeah, I just feel like they could have reused the footage or brought back those actors. I mean,
probably would have saved $3 million. That jarred me because I'm like, wait a minute. Did they just retcon themselves?
I don't think they retcon. I think we're still supposed to assume that was Jack Napier.
The shadow looked nothing like him, so I take offense to that.
I get it.
And you know what else I liked about this film? So again, I liked most of what we saw from Kilmer's Bruce Wayne and Batman. I really did.
As you were talking about that, like I. There's some stuff I agree with you on. Like, I thought that some of the ways he was written, some of the things they explored with him in terms of the psychology of Batman and just a lot of the dialogue, a lot of the stuff with Robin, a lot of that stuff was well written, but I felt like Kilmer's performance was really dull. Like, unfortunately, it's one of the better performances in this movie because then you have the villains that are just completely absurd.
I'm saving that for after I talk about Robin, because that's when I go off on the rails and start getting angry. But go ahead.
Okay. So somehow Kilmer is actually one of the better performances in this movie, but I still find it really quite dull. Like, there's nothing. I don't think he. I don't think it's bad, but I also don't think it's good. Like, it's not.
I will say this. It's far less emotive and nuanced as. When compared to Michael Keaton, for sure.
Yeah.
But, given the rest of the movie, you know, I thought it was pretty good.
Well, that's what I'm saying. In comparison to some of the other performances in movies, it is good.
Yeah.
But standing on its own, I don't think it's very good.
I did like Chris O'Donnell as, shocking to most people. I did like Chris O'Donnell as Robin. I liked the origin. I thought it was very very close to comic accurate. I mean, they replaced Zuko with Two-Face. But
yeah, and I don't mind that. I'll go on record. Just like I actually don't mind, as we talked about, I think, in our 89 review, I don't mind the change of having Joker kill the Waynes, and yeah, I also don't mind the change of having Two-Face kill the Graysons. Yeah, that doesn't bother me
at
all.
Because it made sense with the movie.
Yeah.
And also because it further connects Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson, because their parents died in very similar ways. Even more similar. I thought it was, like I said, it was almost very closely ripped from right out of the comics, so I like that. I like the nod to the original Robin costume from the 60s in the trapeze outfits that they were wearing. That was very nice nod.
Which reminds me, I love the line that Alfred has to Robin about broken wings heal eventually. Robin will fly again. Yeah. That line is beautiful. Right. And Michael Goff, again, just he is a great Alfred.
And the cool thing about that was it gives you the whole description of why there's a Robin on his helmet.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a plausible reason for why he calls himself Robin. So you're right, Michael. God bless that man, because even when he's in the midst of crap, he manages to pull some diamonds out of the manure.
I will say he does.
He turns that manure into a small but lovely rose. You know.
He's the best scene in Batman and Robin. No,
save that, because that's one of my only positives of that movie.
I'll repeat myself. And you can repeat what I say when we talk about that movie. But
if I'm not drunk, I'll probably remember that. But if I'm drunk, because that's what it's going to take to get me through that movie, I may not remember this conversation. So, But no, that scene was great.
I will say though, because you brought up why Robin calls himself Robin.
Right.
Just because I've got to give a shout out to what made me a diehard Batman fan, I've got to give a shout out to the Batman. The way they did it, I loved as well. Where John and Mary when they give Dick like his outfit for the circus, yeah. And they say, you look like, or Mary says to him, you look like our little Robin. And it's right before they die. And I just, that always gets me. Because, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that I feel like is really
emotional. Yeah, that was a cool moment, too.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I got to say, that episode, A Matter of Family, the Dick Grayson origin in The Batman, is freaking phenomenal.
Right. Oh, definitely. It is. And that show is very underrated. And, sometime in the next 10 years when we finish Batman the Animated Series, we'll eventually get around to the Batman. But
oh, hell yeah.
But you know, the other thing too, look, I liked his portrayal of Dick Grayson and Robin in general. Like, the way he was kind of defiant reminded me more of Jason Todd at times than Dick Grayson, but
it was an amalgamation of the two. I feel like it was sort of like what the DCAU did with Jason and Tim, but it with Dick and Jason.
And the funny thing is, you say it's an amalgamation. By Batman and Robin, I wanted somebody to beat him with a crowbar, but that's neither here nor there.
You see, I don't understand. I really, and I guess we'll get into this when we talk about Batman and Robin. I don't understand why you have disdain for him in that movie, but in this movie, he's perfectly fine.
Oh, there's so many reasons, but I'll get to them then, because the less I have to talk about that movie, the better. but like I said, he was you were very, very spot on with that. The Jason Todd and Dick Grayson hybrid, and the costume was very Tim Drake.
Yeah, and I'll say it. I dig all the Batman and Robin costumes in both the Schumacher films. I mean, the cod piece
is unrealistically large.
Other than the cod pieces and the nipples, I dig the costume. I dig the Panther suit for Batman in this movie. I think that the Robin suit that Chris O'Donnell wears is great. And even the sonar bat suit at the end, I think, is pretty cool. So,
Like, here's what I'll say about the costumes. I like that that Val, especially, you know, when you first see him, it's like, it's to me, when a 12-year-old me was like, all right, they keep streamlining the suit, right? So it's the same, it's quote unquote, basically the same suit, just leaner and you know, sleeker, easier to move around and blah, 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 you know, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And here's the reason why I liked it, because look, there's nipples on it. There's no denying it.
Yeah.
But there's not so much of a pronounced attention paid to those nipples.
Okay. I mean, that's true.
Like, there were camera shots in that other thing that we're going to discuss eventually, where the camera was like directly focusing in on the nipples. And I'm like, again, why? Why am I staring at these things? so they weren't pronounced. They didn't stick out like a sore thumb. And I like the sonar suit.
Yeah, it's cool.
The sonar suit was awesome. And
it's our first live action bat suit that didn't have the yellow oval.
Right.
And which is actually, I take that back because I don't think they had it in the serial suits. But other than that,
you can't count.
But it because I prefer, I don't know how you feel, but I tend to prefer no yellow oval. And so I dug that we got
it. Depends. I like the rebirth, the outline, the gold outline. It's very, it's not, like, you know what I mean? It's.
Yeah, well, that's sort of an amalgamation of those two suits. I mean, having no oval and having an oval, it sort of is the best of both worlds.
Exactly. That's why I like it. But so I like the sonar suit. I like the Panther suit. And you know why? You know what I like the most about it too? There was an explanation for why he needed to change costumes, because the other ones got destroyed. Call me crazy, but I like in continuity explanations.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree. That was good.
Which goes back to my previous point. Sure, they sold a toy of that suit, but they gave me a plausible in-movie explanation. Unlike the next one, which, hey, look, we're all wearing different suits. Why? Screw him. Just go. Nobody cares.
No, there is a reason for it. It's because they were having to fight Mr. Freeze, and so they better equip them to fight against his
cold weapons. Nobody said that.
Well, it was implied.
Bullshit.
They were like the...
No, bullshit. Bullshit. It was not implied. It's just, here we are looking even more ridiculous. Go buy the toy. And thankfully...
Those suits were cool at the end of Batman and Robin.
Yeah, they were cool, all right? Yeah, because why? Mr. Freeze doused them with his freaking gun? That's why they were cool?
To quote the Joker, poor choice of words.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
No, but I dug those suits in Batman.
I want to throw the costume designer out a window.
I dug those suits, and we'll get to this when we talk about Batman and Robin, but I dug those.
You dig a lot of crappy shit, I'll tell you that.
Hey, to be honest though, I think you've been more positive on Forever this episode than
I have. I told you I enjoy this movie. It's like a guilty pleasure. I'm not gonna lie. We're talking a little bit too much about nipples and ass shots. I feel like we're reviewing some sort of porn parody here. But you know, it is what it is. They were in the movie. And the Robin suit again, it looks fine aside from the unrealistically large cut piece. it looks good. And the other thing I liked, I will say, it's a like and a dislike.
Okay.
The Batmobile falls in both those categories. First of all, let me backtrack. The Batcave, I love it.
It's a lot more elaborate.
It's
than
the closest thing we've gotten to the comic book full-on Batcave.
Yeah. Now, refresh my memory. Did they change it up at all for Batman and Robin, the Batcave?
I got to be honest. I don't really know because I try to blank out whenever I'm watching that movie. Like, You know, there are times when I hope that you know, something will knock me unconscious while I'm watching that movie, or that maybe I'll just collapse out of sheer boredom. I don't know, but
goodness,
I tend not to know this, so I can't.
Okay, well, I will say I agree with you here that I love the Batcave in Forever, at least.
Yeah, it's very comic booky, and I like it.
Yeah, it's very like it feels bigger. It feels more expansive. Yeah, exactly.
And I like that he had the costumes, some of them in a glass.
Oh, I'm sure Jamie Drewley was happy about that.
Well, I know he misses the bat. You know, secretly he has a love for the bat hangers. I think. You know, and so that's my secretly. Theory, but
did you hear what he got for Christmas?
Yeah, bat hangers. I love it. You know that Brandon Lowe is was it Brandon that gave it to him?
I can't remember. I think it might have
been. He's a clever. I dig that guy. You know, to quote Aquaman, I dig it. Good job there, Brandon. I wanted to have him on for this podcast because he likes Forever, but work scheduling and timing didn't. You know, hopefully, we can have him on at some point. But so I like that the costumes also were in, you know, glass or whatever.
Yeah, no, it was cool.
Again,
was cool.
Very very comic book accurate.
Yeah.
The Batmobile, it's part of my love, my likes and dislikes. I kind of dig what they were going for in the sense that, you know, with it was sleeker and it had it looked like the rib of a bat, the way the design with the, you know what I mean?
I'm sure you've heard that. I see what you're saying.
You've heard them describe it as that before. It looked like the anatomy of a bat and whatnot. So I dug that.
Yeah.
The two things that I totally dislike was the 89 one is perfect. Excuse me. There's no need to change it. Okay? That's number one. Number two, even though I like the design of the new one, when the wings at the back or the fins or whatever you want to call them start flopping around like a plastic friggin'
yeah, they do.
Styrofoam hybrid. I don't know what the hell that was, but it looked like that car was gonna fall apart.
The Forever Batmobile, it's just too much. The simplicity. I think when it comes to the Batmobile, I think simplicity is often good. And I think that they went a little bit too. Yeah. They tried to make it a little too fancy. Yeah. That's not to say I don't dislike it. I think it's all right. I don't think I would like it in other versions of Batman, perhaps. But for this movie, which is already so cartoony and already so neon filled, it works okay. It's fine.
But my thing is, why is it in one scene it's driving and the thing is straight, and then in the next scene they're flapping around like they're gonna fall off. I never understood that. I'm like, I don't get what is the reasoning. Again, what is the reasoning behind any of this? So
I can't help you there, man.
It's part of my love hate relationship with it. Also, I will say, I liked the Fitbit / James Bond watch that Bruce Wayne wore.
That was cool.
Couldn't receive the video. I'm like, screw you, Apple Watch. Batman was doing it in 1995.
Yeah, right? Because, like, it's so cool because there was no precedent for that back then. So it's like Batman was, like, 20 years ahead of the curve with this technology.
I think they should sue Apple. and the other thing, too, I forgot to mention.
Not that car. The other car.
Oh, yeah, that exchange was hilarious.
He boosted the Jag. No, sir. The other car. Steven's probably going to get on me for my...
your Michael Gore is terrible, but...
British accent.
Yeah, what British? There was no accent. I don't know what you were doing there. No, and the other thing I will say, you said you don't like Nicole Kidman as Chase Meridian.
I don't like the character of Chase Meridian, and I don't like her being here one movie after Selena Kyle, who should have been there instead. I don't think necessarily.
Hold on a second, just to be clear. your dislike is 95% that she's not Selena Kyle, correct?
Well, I mean, you know how biased I am when it comes to that.
Right, so about 90-95%, right?
At the same, here's what I will say. I don't think Nicole Kidman was bad in the role.
No.
But yeah, okay, and I didn't like, the other thing I don't like about the character is it's like, it was kind of ridiculous. Like, her whole point is that she just wants to sleep with Batman.
Oh, yeah.
And she wants
to see what, you know, I shouldn't say it. I'm not going to say it. I'm going to get in trouble. Like, I wanted to make a joke about the bat poles from 66. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to keep it clean. Should I say it? I mean, Andy, hold on a second. Andy and them have said worse. on Holy Bat Cat, they've gone risque. I think I can go a little bit risque, can I?
I don't care. Just don't make me go back and edit it out because you change your mind later, because I don't want to do the extra work to do that.
Should I say it? What do you think?
I don't care.
All right. She clearly wanted to slide up and down the bat pole. That's all I'm saying. All right.
That wasn't too bad, Adam.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not. That's exactly what I'm saying. You're
she
not
lights
wrong.
Up the Batmobile. She's wearing negligee.
It's ridiculous.
Now, I don't mind it.
No, okay, yeah. Nicole Kidman is a.
If I was Batman, I'd be smiling like from year to year too.
She is a very gorgeous woman. Oh my god, the bat smile is. I mean, out of all the ridiculous scenes in this movie,
hold on a second. You cannot fault him for that smile. You cannot.
I'm not saying I wouldn't be smiling like that, but I'm also not Batman.
If you were, you so would have turned around and smiled and jumped off the ledge. You know you would have. I would have.
I'm not denying it, but I'm not Batman, okay? Batman doesn't grin like that. It's freaking weird. But
but I can't fault him for it.
The other thing about her, though, is it's so ridiculous. Like, a lot of her lines are sort of ridiculous, and it's like Bruce goes in, he has an appointment. She's a psychologist, and he has an appointment with her. And when he gets there for his appointment, she's there in, like, athletic gear, boxing in her office.
Yeah, because like, this is what professionals do.
I mean, it's
they
just...
They didn't have Thai ball back then, or yoga and all that new age fancy shit they have now.
I mean,
it's 1995, man.
Did they have LA Fitness in LA in 1995?
I don't live in LA. Ask Andy. He's the one who lives in California. Andy, did they have LA Fitness in 1995? Email us. Let us know.
My goodness.
Leave it on a Facebook post.
That character is so ridiculous. She had all she was trying to do the whole movie was sleep with Batman, and it's just like she. Right. I don't get it.
Let me make my point about her. My only real point about her, aside from sliding up and down the bathroom, and then we'll move on to the worst offenders of this movie, the villains. Nicole Kidman portrayed Dr. Chase Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole Kidman is also portraying Queen Atlanta in Aquaman, Arthur's mother.
Yes.
So in some way, shape, or form, in my perverse headcanon, Bruce Wayne / Batman has slept with both Martha Kent and Queen Atlanta. No wonder everybody in the Justice League wants to beat this guy up. He's sleeping with all their mothers. Yeah, Flash, listen, Flash, I don't know where you're... Well, oh, no, your mother's dead. You're okay. You're good.
I saw where you were going with that.
Yeah, no, because imagine if Flash's mother was alive, she'd be next.
Yeah, I know. I saw where you were going with it when you were talking when you brought up that she was also.
Oh no! Listen, once I brought the bat pole up, you knew it was going downhill.
Okay, before you get to the villains, though, there's one other character that's not a villain that was just as ridiculous as the villains, though, and that's Gossip Gertie. Oh my!
Isn't that Bob Kane's widow?
Yeah, I believe so. Oh my goodness!
Keep her out of the movies. She has no business.
I mean, again, I got to go back to that Riddler line. Was that over the top? I can never tell. And she is just, oh my goodness.
Yeah,
she
she's so, like, oh, Bruce, or whatever.
She is here. You know what? I'm probably going to get some hate for saying this, but she was the Donna Smoke of the Burton Schumacher quadrilogy. Or really, she was just in the Schumacher film. So she was the Donna Smoke of the Schumacher films. Yeah. In that she's this character that's just so over the top, out of place, annoying.
Oh, yeah.
That it just is completely.
You know, we have to have a cameo of Bruce Wayne on Arrow so he could sleep with Donna Smoke. I don't know.
Donna Smoke.
I don't know. He's sleeping with everybody else's mom. Why not Felicity's?
Oh my goodness.
Now you're not going to get that image out of your head. Next time, you know, when Arrow comes back, or you're gonna think of that. Next time you see Donna Smoke or whatever.
It's okay though, Adam, because remember Oliver Queen said Bruce Wayne hasn't been in Star City in a while.
Yeah. So listen, we don't know in the CW-verse. Maybe what the hell is the guy's name? The check. Felicity's father. Who is he?
Oh, the calculator.
Whatever, calculator. Elliptical. Whatever the hell his name is. I don't know.
He's a villain from the comics, you know, right, Adam?
Yeah, no namer. But anyway, maybe he's not the father. Maybe that while ago that Bruce Wayne was in Star City. Maybe he had an affair with Donna Smoke. We don't know.
Hold up, he's not a no namer. Isn't he like Oracle's biggest or one of her biggest like adversaries?
Listen, the fact Arrow got to use him freely without any permission, whereas they had to get permission for Deathstroke.
Well, that's because Deathstroke. There were plans for him somewhere
else.
They
had to get permission for Ra's al Ghul as well. So. The important villains, they've had to get permission. So, how important is the calculator?
Well, I'm not saying he's on the level of Ra's al Ghul, but he's still an important villain.
He's right up there with Kite Man, which is before Tom King, nobody knew who the hell Kite Man was.
Well, Kite Man's a great villain now, thanks to the greatest Batman writer of all time.
But Tom nobody King. Knew who he was before, or not nobody, but most people didn't know who he was. But my point is, maybe Bruce Wayne. Is Felicity's father. We just don't know.
We are really on a tangent right now.
Okay, can we get to the villains now?
Yeah, we can get to the villains now.
Unfortunately, we have to get to this. It's ridiculous.
Oh, my goodness.
But, look, I was excited for Jim Carrey's Riddler. What a travesty. Like, what a...
Oh,
what an... Look. I don't know if this episode's going to be... It probably won't be released before that. But in my all-time ultimate Batman casting list, I compared Jim Carrey's Riddler. I use the analogy that he is basically the love child. He would be the result of the love child between the Joker and Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Change that. He'd be the love child of Frank Gorshin and Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
What was he doing? What was he doing?
He was bastardizing Frank Gorshin. That's what he was doing.
Well, here's where we're actually in disagreement. I don't understand how you can love Frank Gorshin as much as you do, and then you don't like Jim Carrey at all.
Because
but...
Frank Gorshin's version was in 1966... which knew exactly what it was doing, and it wasn't supposed to be in continuity to two films that were vastly more serious than this one. That's why I have a problem with it.
I would argue that Batman 89 was not vastly more serious than this film.
Okay, but that's what, but because we disagree on that point, we're going to disagree here.
Nothing? Well, the Riddler's a little bit more over the top, but there's... The Joker dancing to Prince music is almost as ridiculous as anything in this movie.
I disagree with that. But whatever. The point is, because I see Batman and Batman Returns as being vastly darker than this, and it's supposed to be in the same universe, that's why I can't stomach him trying to do an imitation or a hybrid of Frank Ocean with the character combined with the character he's already played before.
It's a ridiculous performance. It is just, and Jim Carrey is, he's not a bad actor.
No, I like him, yeah.
But it's just so.
The only parts I liked him, I'll tell you, was when he wasn't being a total buffoon. Like when he was at the party in the suit.
Yeah.
That was where he was tolerable. The rest of it was a farce.
The scene with him and his boss when he puts the helmet on and he's babbling like what is like that might be that quite possibly might be my least favorite scene in any live action Batman movie.
Or when he pretends to be playing baseball as he's throwing the bombs all over the Batcave when they infiltrate the Batcave, which in quote unquote modern live action, that was the first time the villains had infiltrated the Batcave.
Which was cool. That aspect of it was cool. Right, them infiltrating right. the that
the,
was cool.
But the minute he starts playing fake baseball, yeah. And then adjusting his wedgie and his crotch, it's like are we talking about a theatrical movie, or are we talking about a porn parody? Because the similarities are striking.
Didn't they even play like baseball sound effects when he did that?
Yes.
Oh my goodness! And it's just like, oh, it was rough. That every scene he's in is really, really, really rough. And the facial expressions he makes, like when he's talking at the end, the thing that, he's grimaces and like yeah. Everything's over the top, and he like puts his fingers in his mouth, and he's like, what is it? He says when he's talking about like what Dick Grayson's greatest dream is to be naked with a girl, and he's like,
okay, hold on a second, I laughed. I will admit I laughed at that.
It was kind of funny, but then like the facial expression he makes after that.
Yeah, when he does that gyrating motion. Yeah.
It's just like, what? And like, okay, and then I got to talk about the Riddler costumes for the most part were terrible.
Yeah.
Like the spandex suit that he's wearing for a lot of it is just,
That silver getup later on was even worse.
Oh my god! With the eye mask, with the you know how much it took me so long to figure out that he had like that was supposed to be like one of you know the eye mask with like the question mark on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me so long to realize that it was a question mark, like that glitter thing. I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
It looked like at first I thought it was like a tear that he painted on his face.
Yeah, it's I don't know.
Oh, and it's just oh my goodness, every. Because I got to talk, because it's related to the Riddler, his boss, too. That is another over-the-top performance. Oh, the guy working at Wayne Enterprises.
Oh, totally
when he's screaming, you are fire! Yeah. He's like...
But also, look. I can suspend disbelief when I'm talking about his plan. To use that box that basically that I call it the mind 3D, the mental 3D, to absorb like. Actually, no, I can't suspend disbelief. I checked that. It's so stupid.
And when he's got the helmet on testing it and he starts. I was talking about when he was blabbering, but then when he starts dancing with the helmet. But
my
like,
question
really...
is, there's no is there? Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And maybe I haven't kept up on my science lately. But there is no realistically halfway plausible anything involved in this thing, right? Are they this?
I don't think so.
It's the most I'm gonna absorb your brain power. Like it's so stupid.
Well, You know, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the Thinker on the Flash this season. But, I mean, the Flash, I thought, did it a lot better. So I'm not going to fault it too much on that, because I'm like, yeah, I can suspend disbelief
on
that.
Yeah, but I don't even like it on the Flash, to be honest with you. It's ridiculous. It's too ridiculous.
I dug it there. But with Bennifer, it's not... To me, it's not so much the concept of what it is, but like everything around it, like the green neon everywhere,
here's another question: why would the Riddler need to absorb everybody else's intelligence? He should be one of the smartest people in the room. Should he not?
Am I
wrong there?
You're absolutely right. You know, I didn't even really think of it that way, I don't think, before. Yeah. But you make a great point. And the other thing is, this makes me think, you know, we didn't really see him. Like, a lot of the thing with the Riddler is he's trying to sort of prove that he's trying to one-up Batman and try to prove that he's the smartest person in the room a lot of times. And we didn't see any of that in this movie.
No.
Like,
he just tells you that's his plan, but they never go about, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the scene where he's picking out his costume on the computer. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And he's going through. I mean, can I shout out the Batman again?
Yeah, do what you want.
Okay. Because that, I believe that the Batman has the best version of the Riddler in any medium. I know you've seen the series, Adam. I don't know how familiar with it though. Do you remember the episode Riddler's Revenge though, where we flash back to his origin?
Yeah.
Okay. That I think is so. That I think the Riddler. Because what I'm trying to get at here is that I think that Jim Carrey is the ultimate. Jim Carrey's Riddler is the ultimate low point of the character. But I think that the Riddler is really. I will say that I understand that he's really hard to write, and I think there's been a lot other than Jim Carrey. I do think there's been a lot of times when he's not been written well. But I think that for me, the Batman is the ultimate example of it, and they actually gave him a more tragic backstory. And there's this great line in this episode that always stands out to me as one of the best lines in that entire series, where Batman turns to Robin at the end, and he says he's referring to the Riddler, and he says to Robin, "When is a villain not the villain?" And anyway, that line always sort of gives me chills, and I just wanted to point out that I think the Batman did a great job with the Riddler, but this Riddler was just. Jim Carrey's Riddler is just absurd, and I guess we'll move on to it in a couple minutes maybe, but he's the better of the two villains in this movie, in my opinion, and that is really saying something.
But also, here's the one thing I did like, where Batman had to save both Chase and Robin. That whole thing I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, okay, that wasn't too bad. Oh, okay, I gotta talk about that line. The awful line from Robin, "Holy rusted metal, Batman."
See, but hold on a second. If you're gonna do a nod to 66, a throwaway line like that, I can live with.
Well, here's the thing, though. The whole damn movie is a nod to 66.
But hold on a second. What I'm saying to you is this. You're telling me that this is the same Batman as Michael Keaton, correct?
Yeah.
So, let's say, instead of making it this fluffy and light, you could have kept it, maybe not go as dark as Returns, but had they brought it back to Batman 89, you know, territory. But made this one reference, like the Holy Rusted Metal thing, I would have said, all right, I'm down. Instead of going this whole 360 direction that they went.
Well, we sort of disagree on that, though, because I think Batman 89 is almost as ridiculous as this movie.
Yeah,
so that's where we have a significant disagreement. If you're not going to give the other things that are nods to 66 in this movie a pass, then I can't really get... Like, I understand what you're saying. It's more... If it had just been that line, I would have been like, okay. But
That's what I'm saying. I don't give it a pass. I laughed because I enjoy Batman 66. So I laughed at I chuckled at that. But I enjoy Batman 66 in putting myself in that mind frame. I don't enjoy Batman 66 when I take it in a 1995 context. Like,
well, didn't you take it in a 2017 context when you watched Batman versus Two-Face?
No, I always watch those as part of that continuity. So when I'm watching it, I'm watching it with that lens in mind. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, they are part of that continuity, but it's still a new movie in 2017.
Doesn't matter though. In my mind, I associate it with that show, so it should follow that tone if it's in continuity with that show, right?
You see, okay,
this being a sequel to Batman Returns should not have had the tone of Batman 66. That's why it doesn't work.
I agree with you. I mean, the whole issue with the Schumacher movies is that they course corrected way too far from Batman Returns. But
what I'm saying is, I'm not disagreeing with you there. What I'm saying is, I can watch the 266 animated movies,
mm-hmm.
and my mind knows that. Put yourself in that frame of mind to watch this because it's a sequel to that, right?
Yeah.
When I watch Batman Forever, my point of reference is it's a follow-up. It's the next in line to Batman Returns. And Val Kilmer is supposed to be the same guy that Michael Keaton was, correct?
Yes. And with Val Kilmer, though, here's one thing I'll say about Batman Forever. He doesn't – I don't think – like, there are some lines that are really cheesy, like the I'll get drive-through line. But overall, I can still buy that he's the same Batman as Michael
Keaton. He's the same Batman, but the tone – the tone of the actual movie being, you know, inspired by, loosely based on 66, doesn't work because I'm viewing it as a sequel to – what directly preceded it.
So, okay, here's a question for you then. If this had been a complete reboot instead of a soft reboot, do you think that you would feel very different about it? If this had been its own continuity and had just said, okay,
my rating is going to be a little bit more positive than yours anyway. Or actually maybe quite a bit, I don't know. But if the whole franchise had started or this iteration had started and somebody came out and, you know, because when directors and shit, they do interviews, they tell you, this is what I'm going for, this is what, you know, blah, 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 blah. So mm-hmm. Zack Snyder would always come out and say, I'm going for, you know, we're inspired by The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they introduced Batman v Superman, was with
and then throw in the Death of Superman story arc, and you expect it to be dark.
Yeah. So if they had introduced this movie by saying, holy rusted metal Batman.
No, had they said, you're right, had this been a reboot and they said, we're going to take it back, we want it to be, in spirit with 66.
Yeah.
I would have watched it with that lens in mind.
Okay.
And you know, maybe I could actually laugh and enjoy Batman and Robin a little bit more. But the thing that I can't swallow is this is a sequel to Batman Returns.
Okay. All right. You know, that's fair. You know, that's the best argument I think I've ever heard anybody make for liking Batman 66 and not liking this. Because my whole thing that I've never been able to understand up until maybe now is I've really had trouble sort of reconciling how – I mean, I certainly respect that it's their opinion, and that's fine. I've just had trouble in my own mind understanding why people are so much more receptive to Batman 66 than they are to the Schumacher films. And that's something that I've never truly understood. And I actually, you, on this episode, you've just by saying that, you've helped me understand that, is that you, if these had been set in their own continuity that was homaging that, that it would have been a different story. But the fact that they're in the same continuity as, well, I'll give you Batman Returns because I agree with you on that. Batman 89, I think, is almost as absurd as this movie. But
yeah, we'll have to agree to disagree there, but whatever.
Yeah, but yeah. I can at least take you – I can at least get on board with you on Returns because I love Returns, and I do think that that is a very different movie than this. So, yeah, okay. You've actually helped me understand something that, as a Batman fan, has sort of – been a mystery to me for a very long time. So thank you for that, Adam, actually.
There you go. Now you know.
Yeah.
Right? So that's that's why I am where I'm at. I mean, okay. Do you want to bash the horse that is Two-Face some more, or can we just...
I mean, I don't know that I have that. I feel like, because I touched on...
I think my Barney comment, I think, wrapped it up in a nice bowl.
Yeah, yeah, and I touched on my whole issue with the way they did his origin.
What I will say here, the one glimmer of aside from the 25 seconds that you said,
yeah,
the other one glimmer was when he was hanging there, and Bruce is like, oh, what about your coin, Harvey? You know, you've always been one, and then he goes into Harvey Dent mode for like a minute. It's like, you're right, Bruce. You've always been a good friend. Thank you for that, or whatever.
That is a great point. That is a good line.
In that one moment, I'm like, well, Jesus Christ, he's actually trying.
But we never got them as friends is the problem.
Yeah, that's one of my negatives. But what I'm saying to you is there were probably two moments in this film where Tommy Lee Jones tried to give a performance.
Okay, yeah.
Where he legitimately didn't say, yeah, just hand me my paycheck so I can get out of here.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was a very good line. Have you heard the story? And I don't know if this is true, but I read this somewhere a couple years ago, probably, that like Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones didn't get along very well.
Get along with Jim Carrey either. Look at what he did with the role. It was terrible. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones was much better, but geez.
No, Tommy Lee Jones was worse.
Yeah.
But there's this story that like Tommy Lee Jones went up to him. After a day of filming one day that they ran into each other at the same bar or something. And Tommy Lee Jones said to Jim Carrey, I can't put up with your shenanigans or something to that effect. Like I can't condone your shenanigans, something like that. And anyway, I just thought it was really ironic because I think that Tommy Lee Jones had just as many shenanigans in that movie as Jim Carrey did, but let me see if I can find the article.
Like his whole plan, the only thing I'll give this movie is that it made kind of sort of sense why they would partner up.
I don't know. It
not much, but they were using. They were using each other using him to get enough money to start his...
What were you saying?
He was using Riddler to find out who Batman was and kill him, right?
Yeah.
And Riddler was using Tommy Lee Jones to gain capital to finance that stupid invention of his, right?
Alright, you're right. I guess you're right.
When it comes to the other movie... Their plans don't intersect, don't make any sense to combine, but they combine, and we'll get to that later. But
the reason I was quick to jump on you about that was because the scene where Riddler goes into Two-Face's lair is so absurd.
Oh yeah, it's stupid.
It's so bad. Here I've got the story. I've got it pulled up from an EW article.
Okay.
As Carrey explained, he met Jones at a restaurant before they worked on the film together. And this is Carrey talking.
Okay.
I went over and said, hey, Tommy, how you doing? And the blood just drained up from his face like he had been thinking about me 24 hours a day. It was before the biggest scene we have together in the movie. The blood just drained from his face. He started shaking and he got up. And he must have been in mid-Kill Me fantasy or something. He went to hug me and said, I hate you. I really don't like you. I said, gee, man, what's the problem? I pulled up a chair, which probably wasn't smart, and he said, I cannot sanction your buffoonery.
But I think that he means in general.
Okay.
And not necessarily in the movie.
But you see how it's sort of ironic if you keep the movie in line, though. If you keep the movie in mind.
Right, though. No, but hold on a second. They're both buffoons.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Whereas, but that story is so funny.
I know Jim Carrey used to be, like, on set. He's you should not, you know.
Was he like Jared Leto?
Oh no, that's deranged. But no, he liked to play pranks and shit. So that I can look. I think they should punch each other in the face for what they did in these roles and move on.
I'll say one thing though. One thing that I give. And I, like I've said it before, but I put Forever and Batman and Robin on a really equal field. But one thing that I will give Batman and Robin an edge for is that I actually, with Batman Forever, I don't like any of the villains. With Batman and Robin, I actually do like Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy. So
yeah, okay, I'll give you that. But
so that has an edge for me. But and with because like I've heard some people argue that Mr. Freeze and Batman and Robin is worse than Two-Face and Batman Forever, and for me, I like Two-Face, they messed up not only the origin, but also the performance. With Mr. Freeze, they got the origin right, they only messed up the performance. So, for me, also, Two-Face is worse than Mr. Freeze, in my opinion, but I guess we'll get to that on Batman and Robin.
Yeah, I'll have to think about that and get back to you.
Okay. Yeah, it's something to think about. Then.
I'm not in position to say that right now, because, you know, it's...
The closing scene. I love the closing scene of Batman and Robin running in front of the bat signal. That's awesome.
That was cool, yeah. And you know what else I love? The soundtrack's great to this movie.
Oh my goodness, yes. I can't believe I didn't mention it. The best thing about this entire movie is the song Kiss from a Rose. That is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Oh,
I love that
song. You just
like
it because I sent you a video, a YouTube video with with clips of Batman and Catwoman to that song. That's why you...
Okay, that is not true. I love that song way before you sent me that video. I will say that
How?
Helped
the
me.
Song was now, 10 years old when you were born.
The song was when I was born. The song was 3 years old, but I've always loved it because I have the soundtrack, so I've always loved that song on the soundtrack. And growing up watching the movie, it's in the closing credits, so I love that song. But I have always wished though that song instead of being associated with the movie where Batman has a relationship with Chase Meridian, I've always wished it was associated with a movie about Batman and Catwoman. Because to me, just like in that video, when I think about that song, I have in my head Batman and Catwoman, I guess I would say.
No,
oh, and hold, and hold me, kill me, thrust, kill, hold me, throw me, kiss me, kill me is really good too. Not as good, but very good also.
Yeah, and I'd use that song, or I'd use the title of that song to describe my emotions for the next movie, Batman and Robin. Somebody hold me because it was terrible. It didn't throw me, and please kill me if I have to watch it again. And then, so that's how I would use those three words from that title to describe that movie. But I think that.
There's also Kiss Me, so maybe you could picture, I don't know, kissing Alicia Silverstone.
Okay, no, definitely not. What would I do? I would need Margot Robbie to kiss me.
Oh, hold up. I was only talking about Batman and Robin.
No. I'm telling you the arrangement that has to happen. Margot Robbie would have to kiss me. Gal Gadot would have to hold me. And what the hell? Give George Clooney a gun and have him kill me, because why not?
Oh, my goodness.
He killed the franchise for 8 years. But have we said all we have to say about this movie?
I think probably. I'm glad you brought up the soundtrack.
It's like a needle, folks. Where, you know, when a 5 year old has to get a needle, and he's got his eyes closed, and he's like, "Is it over?" That was me during this whole podcast.
Hold up, you were the positive one on this. For the most part, I actually felt like you were the positive.
Just wait till you guys hear that next one. I'll be in a fetal position with a scissor in my mouth, probably crying. But
I'm very curious what our different ratings are going to be for this film, though. I'm very, very curious.
All right, you want to get to it?
I mean, yeah, are you ready? I didn't want to rush. I didn't mean to rush you.
No, I'm done. Was there anything else you wanted to... Yeah, I'm done. I've said as much positive things as I can. I've managed not to swear throughout the whole course of this episode. Probably won't be the case next week or next time we, whenever the hell we review that other movie. But yeah, go ahead. What's your rating? And you're gonna love my, what I use as part of my rating system for.
Hold up though. Here's the issue though, because I was very curious about. I was very curious about what the distinction would be between our two ratings, but I just realized we're going to use different scales, so it's not going to match up.
Yeah, but you can give a number just to, so it matches up. But
well, I don't know what my number. You see, the numbers are so.
Okay, what's your letter?
My letter is a C+ for Batman Forever.
All right. I'm gonna give it 4.5 Riddler pimp canes out of 10.
Okay.
You know the golden cane looks like a
pimp. Yeah. Joygasm.
Oh, what a stupid. So stupid. So, folks, you know, and by the way, folks, I just want to tell you that my misery over the next two, covering these two movies, is directly accounted to you, the listeners. Because I put out two polls. I was hoping you people would have common sense and would vote against me having to sit down and do this. But lo and behold, here we are because you voted that we do this. So we did Batman Forever. We did Batman and we're going to do Batman and Robin. And God help us all, we're going to do Catwoman.
So, again, you're making it sound like you were the negative one on this episode.
No, look, I will say, here's what I'll say. I can watch it as a guilty pleasure. It's almost a 50% movie for me. It falls just under because of the ridiculous villains.
That's what I don't understand about the number grades, because that's under 50% is an F. And so that's what I don't understand about how it matches up.
But what I'll say to you is this. But like I said, as you know, all my problems, if it's on TV, I'll watch it.
Okay.
And if I have to watch it for an occasion like this, or if one of my younger nephews comes over and it's like, I want to watch a live action, you know, he wouldn't say live action, but if he wants to watch a non-cartoon Batman movie,
uh-huh.
I can't show them the Dark Knight trilogy or Batman vs. Superman. So, you know, this is more kid friendly. So, so there's that. But I still have way too many problems with it. Despite my positivity.
And I'll say I in some ways I do sort of have similar feelings to you on this film. I still have a certain amount of fun watching this movie.
So my question is, you want to start a petition for the Joel Schumacher director's cut?
Well, that red book edition is available. It's really hard to get your hands on, but that it exists.
That's why we should start a petition.
To do what? To
get a director like a Blu-ray director's cut. Come on.
Well, what I'm saying is it exists.
But VHS and the Blu-ray. Come on, Warner Brothers, pony up. we can put it on change.org, and then you can make a big sign on PowerPoint on your computer since you're getting that stuff, and release the Schumacher cut of and we can do it 2 days after the Snyder people, and we can go outside of Warner Brothers in California. We'll hold up the sign and we'll tweet it and retweet it like morons over and over again, and then we'll go hang out with Justin Kowalski because he's in California. So we'll go knock on his door. We'll visit him.
Hey, sounds like a lot of people. A lot of people we know are over there. I think Andy's over there.
Yeah,
and
that's it. We can go. We can check in with Justin. We can talk about Batman Returns, because all three of us love that movie. And then we can go hang out with Andy for a few minutes. And we can
He loves Batman Returns too.
Yeah, but we can Skype chat. We can Skype chat with Jamie, with Andy, and we can talk about bat hangers, because that'll be fun. So we can kill lots of birds with
Okay. Because we were talking about the Red Book edition, and I alluded to it earlier, but that scene where they go to Two-Face's cell and he's escaped and he writes in blood, kill the bat or something like that.
Yeah.
That is a great scene, and I do wish that was in this movie.
I wish they let Joel Schumacher make an actual, the legitimate Batman movie that he wanted to make.
That's the thing. He's a good director.
Yeah, I'm not debating his skill as a director.
And people like to, I know people like to criticize him a lot for these movies, but I'm like, I do believe he could have made a very good Batman movie. It's just, again, it's something that Warner Brothers has an issue with this. They have for a very long time. It's studio interference, and that's certainly the case with the Schumacher films.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
We're not going to get the director's cut. Just like we ain't getting no Snyder cut. We hate to break it to everybody. At least not for 20 to 25 years. But I'm done with this movie. Jordan's done with this movie.
My original point was, though, I don't dislike this movie.
Yeah,
like
me,
I said,
me
it's,
neither.
It's still fun. I have fun watching this movie, and I do have a lot of issues, particularly with the villains, but I still have fun watching this movie, and I had it on VHS growing up as a kid, and so I did watch it a lot growing up, and I do have quite a bit of nostalgia for this movie as well. So I tried to touch on some things that I do really appreciate about this movie. So there's good stuff in there, and I have fun with it.
We like I said, I like this movie more than Jordan. It's better. Okay, not better, but it's. Look, I'll put it this way: it gets worse before it gets better, and worse is coming.
I would in terms of the two other films in this universe, I would say that Batman and Robin is on the same level as this movie. And I know we disagree about this, but I'll just as long as you were giving your thoughts, I'll say Batman and Robin I see on a very equal plane as this movie, and Catwoman I think is significantly better. So that'll be interesting.
And that's, folks, he could not go a whole episode without saying something ludicrous. And there it is, folks. That's the ludicrous comment of the night. We're going to leave it at that. By the way, we're part of the Batman Podcast Network.
Yes, we are.
And so there are lots of, good Batman podcasts there.
And that's, of course, hosted by Batman on Film, who just – I want to congratulate them. It might have been a while by the time this comes out, but I want to congratulate them because as of us recording this anyway, they just launched BOF 2.0, which is pretty cool. So as a very, very, very long-time BOF reader, I'll admit I feel a little bit nostalgic for the old site because that was around for so long in that format. But they're doing some really cool stuff with the new site, and it looks awesome. So Big congrats to the guys over there.
Yeah, I mean, 20 years—that's impressive. I was lurking on that site. I want to say around 99-2000 era.
Wow. Okay. Here's what I actually told Bill.
My beard is older than you, Jordan. So it is what it is.
I told Bill this a while back. I said that there's a lot of people that have been BOFers longer than I have, but I'm not sure anybody has been a BOFer for a larger percentage of their lifetime than I have. I'd be curious to find out if anybody else has, because because I discovered the site. I'm pretty sure BOF was like one of the first sites I clicked on when I first got on the internet, and that was like because I remember when I discovered when I've talked about it before, the Batman that made me a diehard Batman fan. And I went on the internet. The first thing I did when I got my hands on a computer as a kid was go on the internet. This was probably about 2004, looking for information on that TV series. And so one of the first things I clicked on was Batman on film, and I've been a BOF ever since.
Well, the first thing I did when I got my hands on the internet was type in Terry Hatcher, Lois Lane.
Oh, God.
And then after that, I went on BOF. No. But no, I remember, you know, I've been through all the stops and starts from the different Batman film. That, you know, I followed those on there. You know, the year one when that was getting ready.
Oh, yeah.
And then Batman Beyond. And then Batman vs. Superman with Wolfgang Peterson, and he was going to direct, and it was going to be Jude Law and Colin Farrell.
I saw a cool video recently, sort of walking through that script and what that film would have been like. And there's some stuff I read
the script. I dug it.
Yeah, there's some stuff I wasn't a fan of, but there's a lot of really cool stuff.
The year one script was scary.
I haven't read.
But we'll do. You know, somebody brought it up on the Facebook or Twitter that we should what if, like, the Batman and Superman films that weren't.
Was that Travis, or was that Ryan?
It might have been Ryan.
It was one, because I remember we were having a conversation with. I was hoping to give credit to whichever one of those guys it was, but I think they
one
both.
Of those dudes, yeah,
I think whoever said it, then the other one said, "Yeah, that's a great idea." So I'll shout you guys both out.
We're definitely going to do that for sure, because
that'll be cool.
It's a fascinating. And then I saw the first pictures from the Birds of Prey TV show the first poster on Batman on film. I saw it there.
Okay. Cool.
Listen, people may think I'm crazy, but that's a guilty pleasure of mine. I'm not gonna.
Hey, don't call that a guilty. That's a great show. That's no guilty pleasure.
I like it. I know that people don't, but I like it.
That's an awesome show. Yeah, I know you love it, and I'm a big fan of that show too. So no, I wouldn't even say that's something that needs to qualify as a guilty pleasure.
Okay, then I don't have to qualify it. I like that show, damn it.
That show's awesome.
I don't care if you people disagree or agree. I really don't care. It is what it is. Start your petitions. Go stand outside my door with a sign. I don't care.
One other thing I wanted to
let that go, by the way. That's going to be my go-to. By the way, no offense. I'm not meaning to insult people that signed the petition. You're well in your right to do that.
Before we got out of here, I wanted to plug in. This might be old news by the time this episode comes out, but whatever. I was just a guest. I had the honor of being a guest on the Batman and Robin Eternal podcast with Rob Myers and Terrence O'Neill. So I wanted to thank the two of them for coming on. I'm on episode 4. As of this recording, episode 4 is out. By the time this actually comes out, episode 5 will be out, which I'm also on. And then I'm going to be joining them again in the future as well. So if you want to check that out, we talked about on episode 4, we talked about mostly 2017 in Batman. And Adam, they let me rant about Batcat a lot.
Well, good. So you got it out of your system?
I never get that out of my system. I could talk about Batcat till I drop dead of exhaustion. But we sort of recap 2017 and Batman, and of course 2017 for Batcat shippers had a lot to love. So I had a lot to say about that, and it was a lot of fun. So I want to thank them again, and then episode 5 will be out by the time this episode is out. So that is sort of us looking forward to 2018 in Batman and in DC. So cool. If you're interested in checking out some of that stuff, I was, Batman and Robin Eternal podcast. You can check that out. So,
Cool. So if people want to talk to you about this kind of stuff when we're not podcasting, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV. And iTunes reviews too. I want to solicit those. So before I forget, if you like what we're doing. If you don't like what we're doing, we'd love to hear from you. Anyway, we just really appreciate that. So.
And you can find me at. I forgot my Twitter handle now. It's at Superhero Sci-Fi. There, that's what it is. And I just want to thank all the listeners so far. We endeavor to be as positive as we can on this podcast. Sometimes we get fiery, or I get fiery about certain things, and Jordan gets fiery because he, you know, hates Tommy Lee Jones's Two-Face. But
hey, there was the 20 seconds at the beginning, and there was that.
But we get fiery and passionate because we love this stuff, and we know you do too. And even if you love what we don't love, or vice versa, it's all out of passion, and we respect that, and we're thankful of that, and we appreciate that.
And absolutely.
We hope you'll come back next time when if you come back before the Batman and Robin review, we'll be talking about better things, I'm sure.
I just say it really comes down to three things for me. I try to be positive. I try to respect everyone's opinion. And what was the third thing? Oh, and I just try to be honest with my own opinion. I'm just gonna give my honest opinion. But yeah.
And so with that, until our next episode, have a great week. A great weekend, depending on when you're listening to this. We'll talk to you soon. So long.
Bye-bye.